All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for being here. Hope you had a good tech ed so far this week. Seen a lot of good content. This session, we call it an unplugged. This is kind of a not your traditional session where I'm going to come in and blather away at a bunch of slides for the next hour. Instead, what we're going to do together is we're actually going to build the conversation that we're going to have for the next hour directly. So this is your chance to come in and talk about anything that is interesting to you. So I'm going to take a big set of questions right up front, and we're going to try and get them called kind of ordered together. Then we'll walk through all components of those. And once in a while, I'll jump back into Visual Studio or some of the developer tools, and we'll take a look at that piece too. And we'll go from there. And you get to feel free to interrupt me as much as you want with any questions. So stump the VP kind of thing. From a timing perspective and that kind of thing, as you see, we've got Visual Studio release candidate out. How many folks have installed the release candidate so far? Awesome. I love that. Definitely. Great crowd. So we've got the RC, and you should think of that as basically our last public build that we're going to do before we release the final product. So at this point, we're like right down to the very end. I usually like to say if this is like us landing a plane, all your electronics are already stowed away. I can see the runway in front of us, and we're coming down like this. So we're about at that point. We're still taking some feedback and that kind of stuff. So if you do run into any issues, file them on Connect or bring them up here. We'll go ahead and take a look at it, and then we'll talk about getting those things updated by the time we ship. So we're very, very close. All right, so with that, I'm going to use a really sophisticated tool called Notepad, and we're going to start by collecting any questions you guys have got. So let's kick them out. Yes, sir. All right, excellent. Going to start off right on top. Excellent. Okay. Yes, sir. Okay, Visual Studio and C++, and what was the topic? I'm sorry, it's mostly just the noise back. XP? Yes. Okay. Okay. And specifically, you had mentioned C++.
Yes.
Okay. And we do have some mics in here too. I think it's the soft walls make it a little bit harder to hear.
What do you think the future of behavior-driven design and the support for that will be?
Okay. Great. I'm just going to collect all sorts of topics, and we'll kind of sort them together before we start going. Yes, sir.
What is the future of building deployable packages? Like in Visual Studio 2008, we have MSI packages.
Yep.
In 2010, you have Install Shield. What is the future there?
Okay. Okay, great. What else?
What's running .NET Framework 4.5 on Windows XP?
XP, excellent. Another question on, okay, let's take a look at this one. I'm going to put that one right next to the other one there, too.
How about Visual Studio 2012 on Vista?
On Vista. My guess is some people are running these operating systems, so. Yes.
What is the preferred development language for Metro apps for
For
Microsoft?
Metro apps? Okay, great. Okay.
What about continuous delivery for on-premise TFS
Ah,
to
got it.
Azure?
Yep, good question.
What about the future of Windows Forms?
Windows Phone? Okay, great. Future.
Windows Forms.
Windows Forms, okay. Okay, we got a vote for phone as well, so we're going to cover both. I like this. Okay, that's a good question.
Do we need to expect WinRT on Windows Phone 8?
Yes, Windows. Okay, got it. Okay, makes sense.
What's planning about Visual Studio on other OS like Mac or Linux?
Ah. Okay.
What about BizTalk integration in Visual Studio? The 2008 version is hardwired to BizTalk 2006. BizTalk 2010 is hardwired to Visual Studio 2010, and 2012 will be hardwired to 2012.
Is that about where we're at? Okay, great. I was just going to paraphrase the whole one. Get hands and mics. There's still a big one I'm kind of waiting for. Maybe we won't get that.
Hi. Are there any plans for build agents on other platforms?
Build agents on other platforms.
For instance, for building a MonoTouch on Apple.
Yes, got it.
Specifically.
Not Momo, Mono. Other end. There you go. Here and here.
How about TFS server support for enterprise customers?
TFS server support for enterprise customers?
TFS service.
Service, the, yes, Azure. Got it. Okay, got it. Here, let's do that one up here. Okay.
Can we assume that Microsoft is moving more into the hardware business too with the Surface?
Ah, excellent. Okay. Yeah. Oh, no, sorry. That was not the right one, was it? Okay. Yeah, I forgot.
What about lifecycle management of the TFS process templates and upgrading to future versions of TFS?
Okay.
So how will we handle upgrading to TFS 2014 when it's coming?
Okay.
How can we ensure that we can do that seamlessly with your tools?
Okay, yes, with our tools, yes. Yes, I caught the asterisk. Okay.
What's coming up in .NET Framework 5?
.NET Framework 5, okay. Way out there.
What will happen with Big Surface?
The Big Surface?
Are you in trouble with names?
Yes, okay. Okay, got it. Got it.
Is SharePoint development the future of that?
Yes, SharePoint development, good question. Let me put this up here next to the ECT. Let's try and take a few more, and then what I'm going to do is I'll organize them together, and then once we run out, or if you guys have follow-ups, well, you know, interrupt me, tell me I'm wrong, doesn't really matter, we'll go from there.
Jason, I have Anduan. Are you planning operating system for cars?
We have one. Well,
to open for third-party applications.
Ah, for third-party applications. Okay, I'm going to put that one and call that embedded. Let's see. Okay.
What's your plan with HTML5 and what kind of investments are you making on the standard?
Okay, great. Yeah, that's a good question.
Maybe the topic of Kinect and TVs.
Kinect and TVs? Okay, I'll put this next to the Surface here.
What is the future of compiler as a service?
Compiler as a service, okay, great. Put that by 4.5. This is Roslyn. Perfect. Okay. Not one UI question, huh? I'm surprised. Everybody happy with the UI? There's no questions, but no confirmation. Yeah. No? Happy with that? Yeah? Yeah, I'm a little surprised. Like, what I usually get is... Yeah, that's... Anybody have that question? I can leave it on there. Okay. Okay, got it. Yeah. I was wondering about that. Okay, this is a good set. Well, what we'll do is we'll start off here, and we'll kind of walk through. I'm going to organize them into sections so we can kind of talk about a few topics together. That way we don't kind of wind up covering the same ground twice. Those match with standards. Let's see, XP platforms. Those make sense. Let's pull, actually, compiler as a service is kind of a separate topic. So let's pull that right here. And BDD lifecycle. Metro applications, good. And these are a set of TFS. Let's see, Windows Form and SharePoint, kind of on the platform services side, which makes sense. Let's see, TFS, Metro. We'll put Metro here with some of the platform kind of questions we've got. Kinects and TVs, OS. Then we've got to talk about the Fruitbook thing. I think that's interesting. We'll put that up here. And let's see. Build agents for Monotouch. Let's put that with TFS up in that area. All right. That looks like a good set to get started. Okay, so let me just start at the top. And again, feel free, raise your hand, ask questions, shout out. You know, this is totally interactive. That will just make it kind of fun. So the UI, we've gotten a lot of feedback on the UI. I want to thank you for the feedback on the UI. There's several things you're trying to accomplish with the UI. I mean, for one thing, you are starting to see us, do a few things right inside of the IDE. I'll pull this up again real quick. Kind of talked about it a little bit at the keynote, but one of the core things you're trying to do was to really make sure, I mean, that you can actually focus directly on your code, your design, or whatever the thing is that you're working on. Because what we found with 2010, I remember to speak slower. When we found with Visual Studio 2010 is that we'd pop up the application. I'd have a toolbar up here for a bunch of stuff. I'd have a toolbar underneath of it for a whole bunch of other stuff. I have a window over here on this side, properties down below, output window over here, toolbox on this side, and someplace right about the size of your passport is your code. It's not really a lot of fun. So you wind up with kind of needing a bigger monitor and that kind of thing. So one of the things we did with this UI is we actually went back and tried to reduce the amount of clutter that's on the screen. So you'll notice, for example, that there is only one toolbar button, icon bar, and we went back and actually used instrumentation to find out which of those buttons were the most popular and put those on there. We also tried to reduce, some of the extra gradients and colors and those sort of stuff. Now, the intent for some of this was to come back and say, hey, we want to make sure that your eye is kind of drawn into the core things. You got plenty of color inside of the editors and those sort of things, but the first versions then took color out. Now, the feedback that we got on the beta was that everybody basically loved the fact that, yes, I'm glad you have less stuff. I've got more pixel real estate for code, and I like that. I like the quick launch button. I love this thing. There's so many times we've got so many different versions that just being able to go in I dismissed it already. Just being able to go in and find all the commands that I want is pretty cool. Everybody loves that, those sorts of things. Three pieces of feedback that we got consistently on the UI, though. One was on the fonts, and that had to do with some of the all caps usage and things kind of collapsing and that sort of thing. Another was on the contrast, too much gray, not enough color in there. And the last one was around the kind of icons, the specific colors inside of the icons and those sort of things. So we tried to address all three of those in this version. So we added a bunch of color into the icons. We added some into your code itself. So if I can, you know, expand, well, here's my model code, if I expand this out. And what you told me that, you know, made a lot of sense to me was being able to, like, I use the color to find some of my files, as an example. And not having that is kind of painful because I can't actually go in and find exactly what I'm looking for. So we've added a bunch of color in there and tried to go back. Now, the only change that we've had left, and the other thing I kind of liked about this one, because I kind of agreed with this, if you look at, for example, Solution Explorer, Test Explorer, et cetera, when this was in all caps, it took up so much space that you'd only get like this many letters and you couldn't tell which one was which. So that one moved to camel casing or up and down, you know, kind of casing, which is better. And then the only other change we made was to have the all caps on the top. Now, that is consistent with a lot of the, you know, user interface that we have coming with Metro. The Metro style that we've got in the phone apps as well as Windows 8 Metro. And so, for example, this is the Team Foundation service, the preview, and you'll notice between this, Azure, and a lot of our other sites, you do see this kind of casing. It's used to distinguish between top-level menuing, sub-menus, those sort of things, and that's where the consistency is. Now, we get to get a lot of feedback that said, hey, I like everything else, you're on the right track, but I really still don't want you screaming at me. So we are adding an option. In fact, you can go to my blog and look for about 14 different reg key pointers that say, hey, go flip this reg key. Because yeah, we tested it. We made sure that it worked both ways. So we'll actually put a checkbox in there so you can turn it off by default. So the interesting question is, okay, two follow-ups usually show up. Why don't you just give me Visual Studio 2010 interface customization, right? And why are you doing this? Okay, so the second one, for one, as we start modernizing and we start, you know, like I'm running on Windows 8 right here, as we start getting more and more of this other kind of app pattern in there, I do believe that in a couple of years, some number of years, you'll start to see applications get updated. And you might wind up looking backwards and saying, hey, the Visual Studio interface is looking kind of tired now. And I've seen this kind of stuff happen before. I've been at Microsoft for 20 years. And so it was around when we originally introduced, remember when we went from the start in the corner to the little pearl icon. And at first people were like, what the heck is that thing? Why do I want that? It used to say start, and that was simple. And we did that, and people were unhappy with it. So anytime we introduce some of these UI changes, some number of years later, it starts to be like, you know, wow, this looks great. In fact, when we got the feedback on Visual Studio 2012, I actually went back and looked at the blog post that I produced for the new UI for Visual Studio 2010. And it was full of a lot of complaints. Why did I change it from 2008? Because 2008 was awesome. And so now here we are in 2012, and it's like, why don't you just give me 2010 back? That was awesome. This one, you know. So anyway, it does get updated. It does start making changes. In this particular case, we did take the feedback, and it makes sense. Now, why don't we just go plug in 2010? Very simple answer for it, and it's internal. When we made the change for this one, we're actually trying to support very large monitors. And in Windows 8 in particular, they've done a good job with high DPI displays and being able to have very, very large screens. So we've actually changed our icon bars and other things over to vector. They were bitmap before. And so the old interface, the code for rendering, the toolbars, et cetera, is actually changed. So if we wanted to do 2010 as an interface, we'd have to literally go back and recreate all that content as vector art, or we have to go rewrite and have two versions of it. So that's kind of the state that we're actually in internally, just to share what that is. Now, I think it's the right architectural change because it means that you'll be able to scale this thing up to incredibly large screens and it'll be nice and crisp the entire time. But it also means it's not quite as simple as just dropping the old UI back in. So hopefully you like the new changes here. If you don't like the caps, there will be a checkbox in there so you can turn that off and go. Yes, sir. Oh, yes, it is. Yeah, well, for positioning of the toolboxes and like the windows and that sort of thing, the question is it possible to do that? The answer is yes. Generally, the question around customization, though, is what about the themes? Like, I want to go back and retheme it. Like, I'd like to use a custom thing and change the UI to look like 2010. And that, so, yeah, so the comment is, hey, when I do things like, drag my toolbar over here and put it on the other side, then at some point it gets reset and moves back over. It's not supposed to do that. So if you are seeing that behavior, shove it on connect. Okay. I would send me mail, Jason Z, as in Zed, or zebra, at Microsoft.com. Because, yeah, no, it's not supposed to do that. Yeah, and in general, I don't, you know, don't usually have that kind of problem. But yeah, I mean, it's persisted. It's supposed to stay persisted. Yeah, there we go. Got the whole thing in there. Okay, so that's the UI and those sort of changes. You know, if you do run into any other problems or suggestions, let me know. And I think what you'll see is we went through and we made a whole bunch of changes for the release candidate, and we'll continue to make some more. So you may find some icons still that don't have color in them yet. At some point, we will go through and add those in there. If you see anything that's glaring or still causing issues, you know, I want to take your feedback. So it was valuable hearing from everybody, you know, what we were doing. All right, so that's the UI. Let's talk about Silverlight, plans for HTML and that kind of stuff. Let me frame it first just to provide this. And let's talk about these two together. We have a first-class support for both XAML as well as HTML5. Now, why are we doing that? If you look at, you know, the kind of keynote that we talked about on the Tuesday, I believe it was, we know that everybody is running around with a lot of different types of devices. My guess is if you're like me, and I bet most of us have this situation, I've got a smartphone, I've got some kind of a tablet, and I've got some kind of a laptop, and that's just in the bag you have under your chair right now. Okay? I think that's pretty typical. And then I may have another desktop machine, and I might have VMs up in the cloud as well. Okay, so that's great. The problem is not all of them have Microsoft Windows logos on that. So we know that, okay? So we know that your customers are asking for that as well. And so we need to make sure that we're giving you a great way to do that. Now, I think a lot of the app patterns, and many of us are, you know, oftentimes, especially at the TechEd conference, not exclusively, but writing enterprise-style workloads, working for business, you know, contracts and those sorts of things. In those modes, I think the pattern you're seeing is the one we talked about at the keynote, which is, I believe, a significant portion of your computing power is going to be located in services on the back end, you know, whether that's like an MVC or worker role or, you know, those sort of things. But I'm building up my business logic, my data, et cetera, and I'm exposing standards-based interfaces on top of it. Now, with that, the easiest way to now start connecting clients is to do some kind of a website. And we're adding a bunch of support with MVC. You saw Scott Guthrie show on Monday the mobile tools type project for MVC. It gives me jQuery Mobile. And that gives me the ability to then expose that same thing. There's a new API controller class in MVC4 as well, which makes it very easy to add REST interfaces on top of your existing site. So now I can expose those out. With HTML5 support, I can get maximum possible reach because all these devices have some kind of a browser and they support that. And just given the way that vendors are supporting plugins just across the board, you know, HTML5 is going to be the best way to get that maximum possible reach on all those platforms, right? So that's one of the reasons why we're making sure that HTML5 works well. And the standard's coming along. So we've added a whole bunch of support there, both the tools inside of Internet Explorer. My team owns JavaScript runtime as well as .NET, all the rest of these stacks. So we've done a bunch there. And also for Windows 8 Metro style applications, you can use HTML, JavaScript there, same set of tools will work. So that's what we're basically doing with HTML5. We will have first-class tools. We will make it a first-class experience. And it's to provide that web-based standards reach. And then in the case of something like building for Internet Explorer, or for Windows 8 Metro, we'll give you first class to be able to exploit those two environments. Now, question, you know, about Silverlight. So we released Silverlight 5 in November, and so we've got, you know, the support policy and everything in there kind of clarified, and we have support for that. You can still continue to use and do Silverlight development with Visual Studio, and, you know, all that stuff is going to continue to keep working. Now, the real question for me on this one comes down to, you know, XAML and the different form factors that we now have. So the way we look at this is I've got the browser, potentially a big screen. I think a lot of your experiences that you will have, I might have big monitor, keyboard, and mouse, and that's a great combination. I may spend hours doing productivity work. We do a lot of coding, maybe a lot of Outlook, office workers, that sort of thing. I spend a lot of time in that sort of environment. And we have great support for XAML there, WPF, in addition to Metro-style applications for Windows 8 that are coming out. And those are different environments. Desktop is different than WinRT. And we can talk about that too if people are interested in that, like why is that? But those are different environments because of the way WinRT is set up for deployment, for security, you know, basically that whole thing. Then I've got another experience, which is the tablet. So I grab some kind of a tablet. Typically, I might be, you know, at a cafe or, you know, sitting down, you know, someplace at a Starbucks or take your pick, having an espresso, and I might actually be reading. I may be less likely to go, like, I'm not going to write a 40-page novel, you know, on that. I'm typing on glass is hard. So I'm going to have a different user experience for that. That means I'm going to want to maybe share some assets, but, you know, the experience and the flow is probably different. And then I have my mobile phone, and that's the 2 minutes in the ATM line waiting to get some cash or pick up a ticket or whatever. That's a much, much smaller experience. So we think that in each of those cases, you're likely going in, and if you want the best possible user experience, you are changing the layout, the flow, and how you exploit the underlying machine, which is different than a website. And so we've tried to make sure that the XAML stack will work well in each one of those scenarios, and then it just has to match the underlying platform underneath of that. So that's what we're trying to enable with it. We do have a bunch of improvements with XAML and XAML editing that's as part of Visual Studio 2012, as well as Expression Blend and the support for that. And that's basically where we're sitting. So let me stop there, because that's a long explanation. Follow-ups. Yes, sir. So the coupling between Internet Explorer and Windows 8 for HTML5, which is repeating it so everybody can hear. Okay?
How will you deal with the development in the specifications?
So, yes, the specifications.
Obviously, the specifications always develop, and mm-hmm. how will the apps in Windows 8 evolve?
So let me summarize. So the question is, hey, you know, the development you're doing with Internet Explorer, Windows 8 for the Metro style work, and in addition to that, the standards and what are we doing? So at a top level, we're part of the standards committee, both for doing HTML, CSS, etc. And my team actually is one of the contributing editors for the ECMAScript, which is the name for the JavaScript standard. So we're absolutely pushing all of those standards forward, and with all the other vendors too. So we're working with Google and Apple and Yahoo and all our kind of partners that also are, you know, we all have things in that space. So the standards are moving forward pretty well. What you will see us do in the standards very frequently is we contribute a lot to editing the specifications and trying to make them very thorough so everyone can understand what they need to implement. We've also contributed a lot of test cases. We believe that being able to do a good job on testing is one way that all of us, when we're targeting multiple vendors' products, we can get more consistent experience. As much as you can. I mean, this is the one problem with multiple vendors implementing things differently. Even when it's the same, like WebKit or take your pick on multiple form factors, you may get some different behavior. So that's what we're doing with standards. Internet Explorer, obviously, is a standalone. We make that one available with first-class tools. The engine inside of Windows 8 Metro applications that powers the HTML, that is the same engine. So you're getting basically the same engine in both cases. It's very similar to us having the same common language runtime that executes C# and Visual Basic. It's the same one in the .NET framework as the one that powers Windows 8 Metro. The big difference is this environment, WinRT. You should think of that as an environment that starts down at the kernel and makes its way all the way up to the presentation. It's actually not just like an explorer. It's not just a windowing system. It actually has support all the way down to the kernel. In fact, we had to do a lot of work with the Windows team to even get things like debugging to work. And the way that the process lifecycle management works, the PLM for applications that get, you know, aged in and out and that kind of stuff is also completely different. So basically, standards, yes, lots of testing, editing the specs, shared engine between these two components. You should expect very, you know, similar behavior. And we believe it could give you the best possible combination for writing web apps. Ah, yes. Yeah, updates. I see what you're saying. So you're asking the versioning question. So the observation, I think, is, look, browsers can get installed. When those get updated, I know what those look like. But if I write an application for, like, Windows 8 Metro, it targets, you know, a particular version underneath of that engine. How do I handle versioning? Like, if I go off and target, you know, a new version over here in Windows, let's say, if there were a Windows 9 or a Windows whatever, then what would that look like back and forth? Yeah, so with those engines, you'll wind up with a version that, you know, what, I'll tell you what we've done in the past, just so you can see it. If you look at Internet Explorer 9, when that version came out, we added a bunch of graphics acceleration and those sorts of things. We did wind up releasing, you know, basically servicing back to Windows 7 that actually updated some of the underlying support so the browser could work there as well. So there's cases where that makes sense, and the way we handle the versioning is to provide servicing on previous versions so they kind of come up to speed and you hit a level bar. Now, there's a point at which the sorts of changes we've added to the new OS become so big that it doesn't make sense to try and backport them. This is some people ask, like, why isn't Metro also working in Windows 7? And like one of the reasons is it is such a deep change, it's a new OS. So if I had to take the whole OS and replace Windows 7, well, that's called Windows 8. So that's usually the trade-off between those two. But inside of that, we'll do compatibility and those sorts of testing. Okay.
Excuse me?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm not sure you answered the Silverlight question. Is there plans for Silverlight 6? Is there plans for doing it on more platforms?
Yeah. So for right now, I have nothing new to share with you on a future roadmap. We've got Silverlight 5 that shipped last year and the support levels that we've got. So nothing to disclose yet on Silverlight 6. With respect to plans for other platforms, you know, that version, we've got it on the Macintosh, and we've got it on Windows, and we don't really have any plans to take that version and port it further. There's some other folks that have done that. In fact, I think one of the questions is on Xamarin, Monotouch, you know, those sort of things as well. And again, part of that is due to the underlying support. So nothing to share on that. Okay? All right. Great. Let's move on. Oh. Let's talk about platform support. I assume we have a lot of people using XP or customers that you work with that are using XP. Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of nods. So there's two ways that we're doing this. One, to run Visual Studio and the tools, we are targeting Windows 7 and above in order to support the tooling itself. And we want to use the features that are part of that operating system. And so from a hosting perspective, that's what you should expect us to do. We won't be adding support for running on Vista or XP of the tools. Oftentimes what I hear is that, you know, but I'm working on a code base, either my IT department that in the company I work in or the customer that I'm, you know, working for on behalf of a contract, they're still supporting XP. So what the heck can I do about that? So I definitely see that problem. Two things we're going to do. One, from one perspective, Microsoft is actually making a great deal of forward progress on getting enterprises in particular up on Windows 7. There's tons of deployments going out. You've seen the hundreds of millions of, you know, references that have been in keynotes and that sort of thing. So we're making very good progress on that. Because XP itself does expire here, you know, coming up in just a little bit. I worked on XP in some of these versions before. You know, I have a 15-year-old that's taller than I am now, who was just a little kid when the thing came out. So I think most of us would be quite excited to see XP kind of move on. I think I'm right about that. But really, the challenge that you have is, yeah, but my customers haven't done it yet. So what are you going to help me out with? So what we have done is we've got support that we're working on and we're looking at for C++ in particular to allow you to do some cross-targeting. That will allow you to basically do some builds and make sure the CRTs can work on it so we can get that going. For .NET Framework, we've got .NET Framework 4 that runs on top of XP, and you can target that also from Visual Studio. So I think with the combination of those two, and then of course, you know, HTML, you know, will work with whatever browser you install. I think with the combination of those two, you'll be able to do targeting with those versions, but you won't be able to run the tools on top of anything but Windows 7 and Windows 8 for going forward. Okay, does that answer the question? Yes. Yeah, and the question is, you know, can I use the latest version of C++? And we are looking at exactly that. Because we've gotten this request, and so we're working on trying to enable that right now. So when? Don't have a time frame for you yet. It will be after we RTM the product. So the next question is, great, when are you shipping? I don't have the date yet for that one. Like I said, I can see the runway. So we don't have the precise date. That's mostly because we really are down to the end. The product is, you know, basically ready to go. We've made a whole bunch of fixes and that kind of stuff. So we're down to that final point. It's not that far off. I can't give you a precise date. It's on a Tuesday at 3 p.m., but we're getting awfully close. So the XP support for C++, we'd look at doing that right after that because the team is now about done, and they'll start working on that piece as well. And the .NET targeting also works from the other side. Okay, great. So that's XP, Vista, those things right there. Okay, great. So let's talk about these next three. Let me put a little white space in here. Let's talk about WinForms, and then we'll wrap up with X5, and then we'll move on to the next set. So for Windows Forms, we've done a bunch of stuff in Windows Forms. This one says future, but the one thing I want to make sure I also mention is we are doing and continuing to support all of our desktop environments, WPF, Windows Forms, you know, anything like that that you've built for Windows 7, you know, those sort of environments will still work on Windows 8 as well. And in fact, Visual Studio itself is a WPF application. So is Expression Blend. They're both WPF applications written with .NET and C++ as well. We've got a hybrid application. In fact, Visual Studio, I probably win because we have WPF. There's still a few pieces in Windows Forms. We have DirectX. And with the built-in browser tools, the F12 tools, I've also got HTML. I've got all four. I think I either win or there's something else wrong there. But that is how it basically works. So we keep the entire thing going. And there's good reasons for us having those in there. The HTML tools, for example, having HTML, why do we have that? Because the same tools are the ones that we build for Internet Explorer. And so, you know, Internet Explorer, you know, obviously HTML. So it makes sense for us to have that and host it. And that's what the tool is about, is being able to host multiple environments. So we've made a bunch of good stuff in there. We've made some perf improvements and a bunch of bug fixes that are asked for. Now, with respect to futures, what you should expect us to do on Windows Forms, since that's the specific question, we will continue to support Windows Forms. We'll continue to look at your feature requests that you've got. You know, we'll make some of those in there. We'll continue to do perf and bug fixing, that kind of stuff. What you shouldn't expect is for us to go in and add a bunch of additional functionality that's like in a new category. So, for example, we won't go back and make it work with DirectX. Turns out you can call some wrapper libraries and that kind of stuff, but we wouldn't try and do that. Doing a bunch of new flow and those sort of things. In those environments, if you're looking for that kind of feature, at this point we have XAML and HTML. We actually think they're the superior way to do it. And one of the things I get feedback on is, I need you guys to make up your mind. Right? I mean, because have you seen how many data stacks we have? We like to create data stacks, and we've created UI stacks, and you know what I'm saying? That's we've created sometimes too many of these things in the past. So what we want to do is get very good at trying to figure out, look, here's a couple of environments that work very well. We've got XAML, we've got HTML, we'll keep working on Windows Forms, you know, those sort of things, but we don't want to confuse it by trying to add a completely brand new vectors into that code base. So if you've got a Windows Form application, you're good. All right, now WPF, same thing. Those are part of the .NET framework. They ship as part of .NET Framework 4.5. .NET Framework 4.5 ships as part of Windows 8, which means that we're just about to, when Windows 8 ships, start another enterprise, you know, support lifecycle for all of those technologies. So we'll continue to support those. And as long as it's in the framework, then, you know, we'll continue to do that as well. Okay, so that's Windows Forms. SharePoint. So we've done a lot of stuff with SharePoint. 2010. In fact, I showed something off on Tuesday as well about being able to add web parts and designers and those sort of things. A lot of what we did for Visual Studio 2012 is to go back and take the top pieces of feedback on SharePoint development and add those back into the product. So the designers that we showed, being able to do the list designers, those sort of things, those were direct feedback. Right now, actually, Jay Schmelzer is actually, there's another talk going on today that actually talks about doing lifecycle management as well. So being able to do continuous integration and continuous deployment and kind of get into a mode where you can make that part of your SharePoint development cycle too. Because, you know, in the previous release, you could do some of the ALM stuff, but it was a little bit tricky. So we wanted to make that a lot easier. So that's the bulk of the stuff that we've added for this release. Beyond that, SharePoint is super interesting to us. And so at some point when the Office team, you know, whenever they're ready for having a future version that's in there, we'll have a bunch of other brand new functionality that we'd like, you know, we would introduce with that one too. Because you know, we want to make this a very productive environment. And I found that, you know, the cool thing about SharePoint is if you know how to write with ASP.NET and you know C# or VB, the .NET Framework libraries, it's super easy to get started with SharePoint. And there's just a ton of companies that have SharePoint deployed. So it's a really great environment to go back and target. So if people have a specific suggestion, so the other thing I would tell you, since I am getting so close to being done with the current version, I'm actually in planning, active planning mode for vNext. And so this is also a great opportunity in the room for me to hear directly from people using the product if you have specific things you're looking for, because it's a good time for us to do that. So keep that in mind. .NET Framework 5. Yes, sir. Go ahead. What kind of vision do we have for Visual Studio 2000 and whatever wacky code name you decide to call it? naming is always fun at Microsoft. It's either some kind of interesting acronym or something that might be interesting, or it's like, you know, some 12-part name, you know, that turns into something. So for future versions, there's several things that we want to be able to go after. One, we've been doing a bunch of stuff with each new release to pull in additional roles. For the last 2010 release, it was dev and test and dev and architecture. So we added all of the tooling around that. For this release, we've pulled in operations and what we call a stakeholder. It's kind of your business analyst. What we wanted to do is things like lightweight requirements and things like that. That really is, you know, kind of part of our overall strategy. So for each new release, we like to look at who is the next set of people that would be part of building software that we don't have first-class support for. So from a vision perspective, you should expect us to keep doing a great job on the core platforms for Microsoft. So SharePoint, we'll talk about phone in a minute here, that kind of thing. But we'll also come back and add to the lifecycle and the team in those sort of components, and we'll keep expanding that out. So that's what you should expect, you know, for us to continue to do. And like I said, we actually do drive a significant amount of the features that we build based on your feedback as well. And so if you ask for something in particular, the user voice is a great way. You can actually vote and move stuff up. I don't know if people have seen that, but that's a good, I don't know if you guys have tried that one before, but that's a good way to put in additional content. So let's type this in. Yes, my product. If you pull those guys up, you should be able to see a whole bunch of hot issues on there. You can pull back any hot issue you want to vote for. Like I said, we do listen. So when you vote for some of these, we do actually. That one was broken out into multiple. So yes, those votes count, and they actually do help. So anyway, those are some of the future ones that we're putting in place.
Jason, I have another question.
Yes.
About data access technologies, you have a bunch of them, and your message is, to be honest, it's not unified. For example, for phone, you are recommending Lynch to SQL. For other products, for example, WPF or Silverlight, you're saying just go and use anti-framework. Do we need or do we expect another data access technology?
Please no. Yeah. No, we don't. Yeah, no, it's a very fair question. So all jokes aside. Yeah, it's a very fair question. We have multiple ways of accomplishing this. The core that we have on the desktop for the framework is Entity Framework. And it's under active development. Entity Framework, released a whole bunch of support coming from 4.5. Added support for migrations, added support for just a bunch of features, especially for POCO, plain old CLR objects. That's one of my favorites. I mean, it's a really great way for an object persistence layer to basically work. So I think that is, you know, the right option. It also gives us link and that kind of content for direct. Now, the place where we usually wind up with, you know, some of the questions are, how are we handling, you know, some of the other form factors? You mentioned phone, right? And that's an example where we still have some work to do around our local data storage. It's like cache storage. If you saw the Windows Phone, you know, content, you know, they're talking about SQLite. you know, for a lightweight client database and the interfaces you want to program against that. So what we want to do is get entity framework, but make sure that we can do link against it. That combination works really well. And then after that, the choice that people use for their kind of framework of choice, there's still a ton of choice. So I know a lot of people use and Hibernate, and sometimes you'll just roll your own. So we want to make sure those underlying intrinsics continue to work as well. But from a higher level package, it's entity framework. And we want to make sure that that one works good. Okay. So futures of VS, futures of .NET. Let's talk about compiler as a service. So we did a couple of things around the compilers. Has everybody seen Rosalind yet? I'm curious. Quite a few, not a ton. So what are we doing here? A couple of things. One, let's look at C# Interactive. We have included in the current versions of the C# and VB compilers some new support for asynchronous programming. So async, await, you know, these sort of keywords. Trying to make that pattern, you know, much easier and simpler to use, especially around building UIs or doing that kind of programming back on the server. So that's a lot of the new language innovation for the current version. Now, at the same time, we actually want to advance the state of the art for our compilers. So we're doing a project called Rosalind, and you can actually download the CTP. The Rosalind CTP is a brand new version of the C# and VB compilers. The VB compiler is written in Visual Basic. And if you think about what we have to do, this helps us both internally, because we have command line compilers for both of those. And it turns out that today we have separate implementations of the same parsers for the IDE. So if you're typing in a link expression and you're trying to get IntelliSense, there's a separate parser for that. So we have like four different implementations, two per languages, which kind of stinks, and it makes it harder for us to move forward. So when the team's going back to actually rewrite those, we've actually exported those contents back out with APIs. So compiler as a service basically means I can program against the compiler. So rather than just being able to say, you know, csc.exe on the command line, I can actually instantiate a new instance of the compiler, and I can give it text, and I can pull it back, and I can get results, and I can kind of go both directions. This one is the interactive window. I have the Rosalind CTP installed on here. And, you know, this is the sort of support you'd otherwise only get if you were using, you know, maybe some kind of like a, you know, a Ruby or a Python or, you know, take whatever. You know, j=5. And we can do a console.writeline. So I'm basically doing interactive. We'll put a zero in there. Hit that, hello, five. And so what we're basically has got is a nice little REPL window. How does this work? What's happening is this interactive window that's part of Visual Studio here is actually instantiating the C# compiler, taking the text that I'm typing in, running it through the compiler to get the IL and everything compiled up, and then executing it. And so I can now start building up the whole, you know, sort of context stack. Now, why is that interesting? Well, a couple different things. One, internally it's interesting for us because I said it can help us actually build the product. For you, it also might be interesting because if you've got places where you'd like to use embedded syntax, or you'd love to think of some of our languages like a DSL, a domain-specific language, you could now actually instantiate the compiler if you ever have a case where you're thinking, hey, I'd love to generate some source code and do something with it. Rather than saving it to a file, running it through a compiler, loading an assembly and reflection and blah, 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 just create a new instance of the compiler, invoke it, and go use it. So there's a bunch of cool stuff like that. Also, by doing this, we're giving you access to symbolic information and other sort of things for the parse tree. We will, in turn, use that for things like refactoring. So you'll be able to see us do much more advanced refactoring in Visual Studio with that as the core. And in fact, if you look through the Rosalind site, there's actually, if you want to find it and you want to play with it, this is just a very trivial example because you don't have to sit here and watch me type all day. If you're interested in taking a look at it, if you hit my blog, which is blogs.msdn.com, whackjasonz, actually, just a couple of weeks ago, we did a long blog post covering Rosalind. It has a pointer to the CTP where you can download it, and some examples both of, you know, running the interactive window as well as being able to program against it. So if you're interested in playing around with that, hit that site, pull that down, and take a look at it. This would be really cool. Now, the other thing I will tell you is replacing the compilers is a really big deal for us. Right now, some of you should be thinking, I've got a lot of code. You know, I want to make sure you guys do a really good job with that. When's the last time that you had to worry about an if statement in your code going the wrong way? Do you worry about that? You shouldn't have to worry about that, right? Well, if you're in the middle of like screwing around with the CLR and some of the other tools, which we obviously do internally, we do worry about that. So we want to make sure that we do a very, very good job getting everything done, and we can compile millions of lines of code. And we have millions of lines of C-sharp and other sort of code internally, including in my own team. And so we're working through those issues now. So just like with link and generics, if you played with those in the before, you'll see a same pattern, which is we'll release a big major version of the compilers. They're locked down. They ship in the box. At the same time frame, we've been working on something in parallel, in this case Roslyn. We'll go ahead and take the Roslyn release, and you'll be able to install that side by side and play with it, and then we'll make that the next part of the big cycle. So what that means is Roslyn would now show up, and it would be part of the next big major version that we ship. Does that make sense? Are we learning from Mono? In
they
what
are
way?
Doing a bunch of compiler things and stuff like that, while C Sharp is a standard.
So Miguel's doing a bunch of interesting stuff, and in some cases we've actually done some of the similar sort of experimentations. I would say in this case, the previous version of this that we did on my team was the dynamic language runtime, and actually powered Iron Ruby and Iron Python, and that had a REPL loop built into it. We could actually plug in multiple language engines, and so the REPL kind of syntax and logic itself in itself is you know a very common kind of pattern. Applying it to a statically compiled language, though, is much more interesting. A lot like Ruby, Python, you know, JavaScript, and other languages, they're designed to be much more idem and object, and object has you know property bags on it, and you go program against it. A lot different than a static language. So, anyway, I think this will be really cool. It'll be fun to play with, and like I said, it's out there now, so you can actually go play with it. Let's go through a couple of these other ones here. Let me try and hit these quickly. Future of behavioral-driven development. I'd say you're seeing a tremendous amount of pickup on some of what we call agile practices. And you use practices because there's so many of them, right? And BDD and TDD, and there's a long list of things that people wind up doing. Out of curiosity, how many people are using Scrum today? Okay, that's awesome. Probably about, 90%. And that's about where we're at on my team as well. I have about 1,200 engineers. We wind up using Scrum for probably about 90%. Some of the teams that don't are usually they're plugging into other platforms like Windows or Internet Explorer where they're trying to plug into their methodologies. But that's basically where we're at. Works very well. So BDD, TDD, we absolutely want to support those. What you'll see for us inside of the product, you'll see us do more around some of the testing and some of the intrinsic stuff. For this release, for example, we added a bunch of unit testing support. We also added a fakes library. If you haven't seen that, you can add fakes. That'll give you shims or stubs, which helps you doing unit testing in isolation. There's a great talk by Peter Provost this week, which goes through everything in detail on that. So I'd say for BDD, model-driven development, those sort of things, lots of great stuff in there. What we'll want to do is make sure that underlying you can use our tools and use those well. Beyond that, we're not doing a lot of specific, like brand new features for BDD, but you know certainly recognize it as one of the agile practices that people are interested in using. Okay. All right, let me hit the rest of these. Oh, good. Visual Studio 4. Well, no, let's not skip your MSI question. So the MSI question, the usual question on this one is, hey, you guys had support for building deployable packages in Visual Studio 2008, and you don't have that in the current version. Are you bringing it back? The simple answer is no, we're not. We basically, if you look at where we got the deployment going forward, we have support for the stores for basically Windows Phone, Windows 8 Metro. We've got deployment packaging and that sort of stuff for the server, SharePoint, the back end sort of components. For the rich clients, we had included like a helper that allowed you to generate some of those things. There's some open source projects for that, but we won't have first class support for authoring client setup packages beyond what's already available. So I know some people have that, but that's unfortunately the story that we have for that one. Okay, the fun one, Visual Studio on the Mac. So I do get this question quite a bit. I mean, because a lot of people, again, we talked about having tons of devices, and so there's an interest in especially Android, iOS, Windows development. Those are the obvious sort of big clients that are out there. So Visual Studio itself, obviously, it's made to do a really great job for Windows and for Microsoft platforms, which can include doing the standards-based HTML that we talked about, building websites that are accessed everywhere, emulators and those sort of things. But I have no plans to take Visual Studio and put it on a Macintosh directly, Visual Studio, or target native, you know, iOS, you know, style applications. I think people will typically use Xcode and Eclipse, you know, those sort of things for the Android environment. What we do have, which you may not know about, but we do want to support the entire team. And so we actually do have Team Explorer everywhere. So for Team Foundation Server, we actually have a version of the clients for both Macintosh and for Linux. We have a plugin for Eclipse. So all the stuff that we show around TFS for like bug integration, work item tracking, builds, and all the notifications and those things, we actually have support and we plug it in. So it's kind of weird. I own Visual Studio, but I ship Eclipse RCPs so that they can run on these other environments so that you can make those work. But I think the reality of some of the software we build today is if I build, you know, back-end services and then I connect up rich clients, you still want to have access. You'd like to have your entire team sharing a backlog, working on the same set of bugs and defects and builds and those sorts of things. So that's the level of heterogeneous support that we have. The last thing I'd say in this is we are adding more support in Visual Studio in the browser for some of our functionality. We've always had work item tracking. That runs in any browser. So I can go to Safari on my MacBook, and I can connect up to TFS, and I can look through source code, and I can look through bugs. For this release, we've also added the agile planning, you know, the Scrum support, backlogs, task boards, those sort of things. Those only run in the browser. All you need is a standards-based browser. We actually even use HTML4 for that markup just to make sure it has maximum possible reach. And so you can use those there as well. So anyway, that's the plan around the Macs. You'll have that support. There was also, yeah, the question around the build agents and those sort of things. That's very similar and related to that. We do allow you to do builds on these environments. So the ones that we help you with are doing especially things like Java, you know, development. If you want to do that. On the Macintosh, you have to use their build environment. But we do have the ability for you to be able to query in your build agents. And you can do pulls off of those. You can do automated builds and that kind of stuff. There's no reason, you know, and that's highly customizable. We even have a workflow. It's all scriptable. And so we've had people plug in all sorts of tools. In fact, we use it ourselves. We've got about 40 million lines of code that we compile for Visual Studio, .NET Framework, et cetera. 40 million with an M. The oldest piece of code that we have, I shouldn't say oldest, the most original piece of code that we have that's under active development is C++. The C++ compiler, we've been actively developing it since the late 80s. So it's a big piece of code. And if you can imagine this, every night we basically do a pull or do a sync of all of this code. We parallelize out all of the builds and we crank builds all night long. We do a bunch of the stuff in parallel, and then the builds start to drop in, and then we kick off all of our automated tests the next day. And we do that every single night in order to go pull things through. So it's quite a big enterprise. Now, as you can imagine, we've also written a significant amount of custom tooling. So we do things like look for breaking changes. Like there's a particular tool that we wrote for the .NET framework that actually queries all the public surface area for .NET. And we have a baseline checked in. And so if a new API shows up that's not part of the baseline, we can flag that as an issue. Like, did you mean to do that? Right? Because if you did, we better document it. We better make sure that it was, you know, planned, that kind of stuff. So those are just example tools. That's all built on top of the underlying automation for TFS and, you know, MS Build and that sort of content. And so you can plug in anything that you want. You could do a Monotouch, et cetera. The ones we do are for, you know, right out of the box of Visual Studio, and then the help on, like I said, Java development, the places where Team Explorer everywhere would work. Okay, let me flip through the last ones of these, and we'll get down towards the end here. Continuous delivery for on-prem and the service, you know, what are we planning, upgrades. So for TFS, the way you should think of the service, and if you haven't signed up for the service yet, I definitely would recommend giving the thing a try. I love it. It's awesome. I've been doing some active development myself for a web project that I'm building with connected clients, and even just with me, it's been very, very helpful. This is basically, like, you can get signed up. It's tfspreview.com. One of the things we did 2 weeks ago is we removed the invitation code. So anybody can just walk up to the site, and you can go create a site. Now, the part that's cool is there's no database databases to deploy. There's none of that stuff. It's software as a service. So just type in a unique URL, hit enter, and under a minute, you'll actually have a URL back that you can just go into Visual Studio and paste it, and all of a sudden, boom, you've got the web client, which I'm showing here. I can also hook the same particular thing right up into Team Explorer. So if I've got Visual Studio, it's very easy to go over to Team Explorer, and as you can see, I'm connecting to that same thing. This is another one right next to it, but it's on TFS Preview, and I can get work items and tracking, source control, all the rest of that kind of stuff. Now, the way you should think of the service itself is something we're building up. We're in preview. We're not even yet to beta. But the fact that we've removed the invitation codes mean we expect that, you know, we really are, you know, moving along towards getting into beta and final release and that kind of stuff. So we're trying to encourage, you know, more and more usage on top of it. Features, you should expect us to wind up with parity on the service with what we have on premise, but we don't have that yet. Okay, I'll give you why don't we? Well, one of the things we're trying to do is we're maintaining both versions. We want to, because many of you work in corporations, governments, you're behind a firewall. You're always going to want some kind of version like that. In addition to that, we are actually making sure that the service itself completely targets and becomes a web scalable workload, a cloud scalable workload. So as we went through, for example, we switched from SQL Server to SQL Azure, and we split our big storage out into blob storage because that's the best way to do that on the cloud. So we're targeting platform as a service, and every time we bring a service online, we take advantage of that. A good example of this most recently was being able to do builds in the cloud where we actually go off and go, you know, orchestrate that. So you do a check-in, you can just say, hey, I'd like a build with that. You don't say, I want that machine to do this build at this time. You just say, check the box, I'd like a build with that. And we go set it up and just go do it. And we can do that because we're scaling in the cloud. So it'll take us a while to get that done, but you know that's the process that we're following. But you should expect over time it'll be there. So that's the answer to your next question, which was the enterprise workload thing. For right now, the service is best for probably smaller teams. Like if I have a team of five, it's great for collaborating. If you're trying to use like lab management, you know, the kind of big scale testing, you know, web deployment, you know, massive sort of stuff, the service is not quite there yet, but it will be. And we'll make sure that if you are especially MSDN subscribers or your business or wherever you're working, if you've got those benefits, we'll make sure that that works for you here as well. You know, that's basically where we're at. So we're making good progress. Yes, sir. Active Directory integration. Yes, we do want to get all of the authorization stuff lined up. And this is one of the other things that we're working hard on in the cloud, is trying to get the different authorization systems to synchronize correctly. So right now, you need kind of like your Microsoft ID to go hook that up. But a great enterprise feature will be things like, you know, the Active Directory integration. It'll also include the ability to migrate your data back and forth. So if you use cloud and somebody decides, yeah, we really need to have this on-premise, you need to be able to migrate it. That's a feature on the backlog that we don't have yet. So again, the service is really cool, and it's coming along very well. But if you're doing big team development in the enterprise, you're still going to want to use Team Foundation Server for right now. But just know the roadmap is there. And you know, like I said, it's, if you're doing any projects on the side or the weekend, that kind of stuff, and you just go give it a try. It's free. Just pop in a name and hook it up to VS, and you're good to go. Okay, upgrading, and we got about 5 minutes. So let me click through these things. I want to make sure we get you off to your sessions on time. Upgrading, yeah. Your real question was, hey, I'm using your tools out of the box, and sometimes it's painful. I'm reading between the lines a little bit, based on the comments. So yeah, we're trying to work hard on the upgrade stuff and really make that seamless. For the on-prem version, we're still always going to have the issue of we need to be able to migrate up to the next versions of the product. Typically, the stuff that causes problems on migration is when you've done a really high amount of customization on a template in particular. Because if you just use the out-of-the-box templates, a lot of it really is just a SQL database, you know, style migration. And then we write the clients and the back-end server logic to be forwards and backwards compatible. We spend a lot of time making sure that works. So typically, the issue is with a lot of customization. And there's reasons why people do that. Oftentimes, you're integrating with another system, like manufacturing system, you know, PLM kind of thing. In those cases, if we don't own the underlying code, it's harder for us to do the migration. That's why we provided the toolkit, and then we have the partners that can come in and kind of help with that. So we're going to do some stuff to make it better, but I guess what I'd suggest, if you're hitting specific issues that are really driving you nuts, semi-mail, because I would like to make sure we understand them. If we can do something about it, I definitely want to. I will tell you, we just finished moving 1,000 people over to the final version of TFS internally. So we do exactly the same kind of migration. That took us, I mentioned these big builds, we were offline for about a day and a half, which is the best we've ever done for that much. I mean, it's a 12 terabyte database, just to set expectations. The last release, we got to 17 terabytes. This time we kind of pruned some stuff and did a different branch. But that's about how much, you know, from a scale perspective. And we average about 3,400 or so active users per month, just to give you an idea. We have 23 million source files, I believe, something like that. I got some other stats in there. But it's a big scale sort of deal. Okay, so let's look through this last set. This is our platform stuff. Metro applications. So one of the things you see us do with Metro is, the question is, hey, what's the preferred one? What I will tell you is we actually worked very hard to make sure that all the languages that we support, you'll see them in the Express queue, are actually all first class. So you can use JavaScript and HTML, C#, Visual Basic, and C++, and we've made sure that each of those has got a first class set of scenarios. In fact, as part of planning, we actually literally went through and looked at, you know, each of those scenarios and then made sure things like, you know, acquire the tools, build, debugging, profiling, you know, all those sort of, like, we could get those to be in a very good, consistent state. We also did performance and reliability testing, those sort of things. So to me, like, why are we doing that? Well, it's not because, you know, I no longer like .NET. I mean, I was one of the four original developers on the CLR back in 96. So if anybody should love .NET and CLR, it should be me, right? Still do. It's great. We're still making progress, and we're doing a bunch of stuff on it. But we also know that there's a lot of programmers out there that also have skill sets in C++, and there's a lot of programmers that also have skill sets in JavaScript and HTML. And those are powerful environments. We'd like to have everybody on the platform, right? So what we're trying to do is expand that reach and say, yeah, these are all first-class environments with first-class tools, and you'll find really good parity. So really it comes down to, you know, which system are you most comfortable with? And if you're currently like a Visual Basic or a C#, you know, developer, you're good to go. We've got first-class tools. You can do everything you can do in the other environments. The tools will work. You know, and then we hope that the JavaScript programmers will also come in if they have HTML skills, and they'll be able to build, you know, cool apps. And we have a combination of all of these. So, for example, if you pull up the store application that comes with Windows 8, this is an HTML JavaScript application. And, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know that. It's, you know, it's a store app, right? I mean, it does exactly what you'd expect. But there's a set of other ones that are in here that are also XAML examples. And, in fact, we've got a lot of cases where people that had, for example, Windows Phone applications have actually taken those assets and gotten them ported over and actually built a really great Windows 8 Metro application. So, anyway, they're all first class, and we want to make sure they all do very well. Okay, future of Windows Phone. Last week, on Wednesday in San Francisco, the phone team announced and showed off Windows Phone 8, which they showed off a whole bunch of new functionality in there. So it's a really cool release. We've actually, one of the other questions I often get is, hey, why wasn't the Azure and phone tools included in Visual Studio when you guys released the beta and the RC? The main reason is that those are driven by the platform schedules of our partners. And so what you saw is we released the RC. A couple of weeks later, the Azure team released the big update to the cloud with infrastructure as a service and other sorts of things. We released tools. So what you should expect now that the phone team has come out and talked about Windows Phone 8, you will wind up with great first-class tools in Visual Studio 2012, and they'll be able to target Windows Phone 7X and 8. So if you're working on either of those two, you'll be able to use Visual Studio to go do that. So there's a bunch of really cool information out there. There's support for C++. There's support for a bunch of new productivity features as well. Really great stuff out there for that. So definitely go take a look at that announcement. WinRT and Windows Phone, that was another thing that was talked about. What you'll find is that Windows Phone 8 now starts to incorporate some of the same kernel components that we've got in Windows 8 coming out. Now, that's good news for us as developers, Because what it means is you're going to start seeing a much more consistent stack that starts at the kernel and goes up across the two environments. So Windows Phone 8 will be a step on that journey, so you'll see some of those components. If you're using our frameworks and that kind of stuff, you may not notice too much. And that's part of our job, is to make sure you can do a good job. In fact, if you're a .NET programmer, we've added something called .NET Portable Libraries, and it's enabling you to be able to write some core logic, like basically class library style logic, that can be shared in all these environments, so you don't have to rewrite or report or any of that kind of stuff. I think the UX you probably will wind up doing differently because the screen form factors are different. Anyway, so there's a bunch of good stuff on there. Tools are not yet shipping yet because we're waiting for the drops of Windows Phone 8. But you can see the announcements and you can see all the features that are coming. Lots of good demonstrations. Hardware. If you saw Steve and Steven's keynote, we've actually been doing hardware for 30 years. So we've got a lot of experience doing hardware. Now, what we haven't done is this kind of device before. So there's a lot of good announcements that they covered inside of that. And I think the best place to get details on the Microsoft Surface is actually the site. And the keynote, I thought, was very good at covering it. It's going to do the best possible job. It'll show you, kind of what the form factor is, some of the manufacturing decisions that went into it, and some of the cool new hardware innovation. Now, the cool thing for us on the developer side is it's just going to be the same tools that you're already using. So if you've downloaded the RC, file a new project, and create a Windows 8 Metro application of whatever type, it will target that device and then all the other devices that you've seen at some of the computer trade shows that the OEMs are also producing. So it's going to work great for that. Okay, Kinects and TVs. What we've got is the SDK. In fact, you guys saw the BattleBots on Tuesday that were out there. That was the Windows Kinect SDK. And so underneath, you probably didn't see it, but underneath the BattleBots down there was actually a couple of laptops that were on the trays. And that was basically Kinect hooked up basically with the controller, the guys that had the controller as well. So we have that support, that functionality. You can program against it today, which is pretty cool. You can build a bunch of neat applications with it. I think this gets into the future of user interface. Right now, we're all doing a ton of stuff with touch. I think the ability to basically, have big wall-sized screens, being able to actually use your arm to do gestures and metaphors, that is going to be, this natural user interface. These are voice recognition, the things we did with Bing and Xbox that we've released. All those things are going to become pretty much a very common part of our living room or our entertainment systems. And then potentially, depending upon the business application, there certainly are places. Imagine, modeling in 3D and those sorts of things, right? Imagine, it's kind of like I saw last week, the movie Minority Report with Tom Cruise 10 years ago. And to me, it's really cool that in that movie, he had to wear gloves in order to do all these cool. And we were looking at the screens going, wow, that's freaking awesome. 10 years later, you don't even need the gloves, And everyone in here could download the SDK and build that application on big screen TVs. So I think that's pretty cool. I mean, congrats to the folks that wrote the movie for kind of thinking ahead. But that's a really cool, advancement for all of us. We can write some pretty amazing, cutting edge new hardware technology and that kind of stuff. Okay, final thing on here is embedded. And what I will tell you guys is we obviously do have for phones, building controllers, that kind of stuff, Windows embedded, and including the compact framework. One of the things we're working on right now is we're looking at can we get support for the compact edition, the Windows CE, into Visual Studio 2012. That was something that was not in 2010. But it is something we're looking at pulling back in because we got a lot of requests for it that people would really like to see that. So I don't have a precise date, but know that we are looking at it right now and we're working on trying to get that back up and running. So I think that'll help. On the third-party extensibility, if you do pull up the CE and you do a custom thing, there is some work to be done in there. If you have questions on the hardware, come see me afterwards and we'll talk about that. So with that, I think we're down to 2 minutes, and I want to make sure people get in their sessions. So if you have additional questions, I'll stick around for a minute. Otherwise, I'll say thank you very much, guys. See ya.